Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. My name is Kyle. I'm happy to be joining you for the next hour or so here on the Take It Easy radio show on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Of course, if you're looking for us and more content other than just these two radio shows every week, look us up, Instagram, Take It Easy Podcast, Comical Sports Memes. Find the Take It Easy Podcast everywhere that you get your podcasts as well. We got a fun show planned for you today, coming live from a beautiful, sunny California, unlike the rest of the country, which is buried in snow and frost at this point. Can you believe that Texas and New Mexico, all these places are just buried with snow at this point? Honestly, it's jarring to see Texas buried in a snowstorm. Welcome to the 2021 America, where Texas is buried in a snowstorm, people are without power. If you're listening and you're in one of those places, one, the dedication is real to this podcast and this radio show. If you've continued to support the stuff that I'm doing out here and what Martez has set up here on the Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash Network, thank you for the dedication. But also as well, it is a crazy world out there. So best of luck to everyone who is, frozen or without power, or whatever the situation may be. I remember back when the fires were going on back in August, and I was talking about how here in Northern California, it was just kind of like, hey, I'm looking outside, and there's just an orange sky and haze and smog and everything. And now I realize that in another way, this is affecting and inflicting the rest of the country. And so it's this interesting place that you find yourself in. Where now I'm looking around and I'm seeing the rest of the country buried in frost. And in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, I am not paying as close attention as I would have liked people to have felt maybe when I was going through the fires. And I said, look, you're buried inside your house. You can't really leave. You can't go outside for an extended period of time without having exposure to unhealthy air and potentially some sort of health ramifications, especially for people who had underlying issues. And so it was like 4 to 5 weeks where I was just inside. This was at the very beginnings of our radio show. Our podcast is every day. So of course that you can find whenever, but at the very beginnings of the radio show, I was like, yeah, we are pretty much inside the whole time. And it's brutal. It was brutal. And so I'm guessing that a lot of people are going through something similar in Texas or the panhandle up towards Tennessee and Kentucky and Ohio and places like that, to all of y'all through the freezing, blistering cold, and into New Mexico and Arizona too. I was seeing our boy Juju, who's a friend of the podcast, and he is just buried in cold and ice and snow at this point, which is funny to think about considering he lives in like eastern New Mexico. So it's a jarring image, and it's a funny image to think about, especially in places that we usually associate more with deserts than we do with blistering cold and snow. Other than that, we got a pretty good show today. I'm going to talk for a good deal about the franchise tag, and we're going to talk about Donovan Mitchell. Maybe we'll get into Carson Wentz as well. The way this always goes, I just got a bunch of topics laid out here, and we'll see how many we get to by the end of the show. So first place I do want to start off is with the NFL and with the franchise tags, of course. This is our main topic of the day. I don't have any nuanced perspective here. I just did research on the franchise tag, and that's what I'm bringing to the table here today. So the franchise tag deadline is a little bit away, but I think the natural course for a lot of football fans is that because there's downtime right now, you're trying to, like, look forward and look to see when is the next big thing in football. When does the offseason officially commence? When are we going to get a big trade that we can make content about for a week? Because this is how the NFL cycles work, is that it's easy for myself to, per se, transition into basketball. But the content's going to go down because football season has ended. And, of course, football season is the driving force of the sports media landscape because – football is king in the American sports landscape. And so you're in this interesting position where you look around and you're waiting and waiting. And so franchise tag deadlines are still a ways away. I think right before free agency hits, so I think it's like March 10th or something. But if you wait till then free agency starts to dominate the headlines. And so if you think well in advance of the franchise tag and start to think about the dynamics a little bit, there are some interesting storylines going on this year. And based on where we were last year with the COVID pandemic, with people making these one-year deals, people not necessarily making the trades themselves, there's this interesting dynamic that has sprouted up. And so I wanted to focus in on that for our main topic of the day. The NFL's franchise, got the music going there real quick. Apologies. It's not over yet. We're still early on in this hour. But anyways, the NFL's franchise tag is unlike anything in any other pro sports league. An NFL team can have basically exclude, I think this is just the basic definition of it, like monopoly negotiating rights with one of their star impending free agents, paying them top five money at their position if they can't come to some sort of long-term deal. And the power of the franchise tag has become an amazing bargaining tool in recent years as NFL teams move into a new way of thinking about roster construction. And for someone who's a casual fan, or maybe someone who's football is a side passion, but maybe they're big into wrestling or big into basketball or whatever it may be, the term franchise tag for a lot of NFL fans is becoming a new thing where it entered the lexicon around the past few off seasons, going back 4 or 5 years, specifically when it comes to players like Kirk Cousins or Dak Prescott. And before then, it was a lot like a lot of analytics numbers like QBR and DVOA and terms like that, where football people knew what they meant, but people who are just watching football to watch football probably don't know as much about the franchise tag. And now everyone knows what the franchise tag is at some sort of base level as a football fan. But at its most basic level, a team can franchise tag one of their impending free agents. That player will not enter free agency. They have exclusive or non-exclusive rights, depending on whether you want a franchise tag or a transition tag, towards potentially re-signing one of those players. And so when the franchise tag started back in 2009, everyone was eager to use it when it went through collective bargaining. It was like a one-year extension that they could give to a number of their players. And so by that point, people just started using the franchise tag to use it. They just wanted to do it just so they could say that they were using the franchise tag, because it was this new thing that wasn't around in any other sports league, and people were trying to figure out what does the future of this franchise tag result in. And people just didn't have data to back it up. And so people just started dropping franchise tags left and right. And some of those were just weird. Like the Chargers gave Darren Sproles a franchise tag in 2009. The Jaguars gave Josh Scobie, who had never been better than like a top 10 kicker at any point in his career, he got a franchise tag. The Dolphins gave a franchise tag to somebody named Randy Starks. And Washington gave a franchise tag to some dude named Fred Davis, who is a tight end who never played in a single Pro Bowl in his NFL career. And so teams finally did learn a little more about the franchise tag. And in 2013, the number of franchise tags went from 19 teams putting a franchise tag in 2012 to just 8 in the 2013 season. In 2014 and 2015, that number went down to 6. So all of a sudden, people started becoming strategic about when to use the franchise tag after they'd given it once before or twice before. They just started getting smarter about when they wanted to apply the different franchise tags. And so as the years went on, teams decided that they should use a franchise tag on a player as a negotiating tack towards a long-term deal. Like, a franchise tag could be a way to, instead of before hitting free agency or negotiating a year in advance on a contract extension, the franchise tag was used as a way to extend the window to sign a long-term contract extension, sometimes up to a year, sometimes a month, if people wanted to rescind the offer, which was one of those weird ones with Josh Norman, one of the weirdest franchise tag moments of recent history. It was just strange when all of that happened, where the Panthers franchise tagged him, rescinded the franchise tag, but didn't trade him. They just let him walk in free agency when Josh Norman still had pretty good value going into free agency. He signed with Washington for a big contract. But the team, or shall I say the person, who set this trend in motion was none other than our best friend Jerry Jones, who back in 2015 gave Dez Bryant the franchise tag to sign him to a 5-year extension at slightly less than what his market value was. But at the time, it was a record. It was about $70 million, about 30-something guaranteed for Dez Bryant. All of a sudden, the following season, 4 of the 9 franchise-tagged players, coming off of 6 the year before, 9 players were franchise-tagged, but 4 of them got long-term extensions before the 2016 season ever began. So you had the same number of people operating under the regular franchise tag, five players who got franchise tag, played out the year on a 1-year contract, then hit free agency the following season, and 4 players who were franchise tagged and got long-term extensions. Mixed bag on whether they worked out. One of them was like Muhammad Wilkerson. Another one was Von Miller. It's a mixed bag on whether those contracts worked out or not. In 2017, the following season, only 5 players got a franchise tag, and 2 of which signed long-term extensions with the teams who gave them a franchise tag. And a 3rd one was Le'Veon Bell during that weird season where he ended up sitting out and not signing the franchise tag. By the time 2019 rolled around, so 2 off seasons ago now, all 6 players who got franchise tagged were either traded or signed to long-term extensions before week 1 of the 2019 NFL season. So that's the background history leading up to where we are now. And so all of a sudden, when we find ourselves technically post COVID pandemic, you have a changing guard, not because of the pandemic itself, but just over the last 2 off seasons, there's been a change in the way the franchise tag is used and how it's put into motion. And to be fair, the sample sizes are rather small. However, the change over time seems to be something that will continue until a better such model is presented. The models change, but it's a copycat league, and people copy the things that they see succeed. And so what we've seen in terms of a shift in the way front offices are assembled can be attributed to 3 main points. A, the Kirk Cousins experience. B, the rise of long-term cap flexibility. And C, the declining value of the first-round pick, which if you check out our blog as well, we've written about the declining value of the first-round pick. It'll come up in a podcast later on or maybe a radio show, but continue to just be on the lookout for that as a future story potentially. So there's always a number of things that play into it, but those are 3 things that I wanted to focus in on: the Kirk Cousins experience, long-term cap flexibility, and the declining value of the first round pick plays into what we've seen last offseason and what we anticipate this offseason in the changing of what the franchise tag valuations look like. So let's start with Kirk Cousins. So Kirk Cousins, for those who may not know, Kirk Cousins was drafted in 2012 in the fifth round by Washington in the same draft as RG3. And Mike Shanahan wanted to play RG3. RG3 had that one season. Second year, fell apart because of injuries. By RG3's third season, Shanahan had been fired. Jay Gruden had taken over as head coach. And Jay Gruden wanted to play Kirk Cousins. And so in his third year, Jay Gruden did play Kirk Cousins. And in his fourth season, Jay Gruden started Kirk Cousins from week one throughout the season. And Washington finished 8-8, I want to say, that season. 9-7, maybe. 9-7. And they were the four seed. Made the playoffs game, I believe, to see, this was 2016. That means that they would have been playing. So this was the Super Bowl 50 season. So that means that they would have been playing potentially Carolina, Arizona, Green Bay, them. Anyways, I'm trying to remember. Maybe, no, not Green Bay. Who did Carolina play in their second playoff game? I'll get back around to that. But anyways, so after that season, Kirk Cousins was a free agent, and Washington made the decision they were going to franchise tag Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins was willing to – he was game. He was willing to play. Kirk Cousins had made $2.5 million throughout his career. And Kirk Cousins was game. He's like, sure, I'll take the franchise tag. I'll take $22 million, which would have made him an average of the top five highest paid quarterbacks, which makes him, I think, by default, the third highest paid quarterback in the NFL. The Seahawks was the team. See, I thought it was the Seahawks, but I also remember that Washington played against Washington ended up playing against the RG3 played the Seahawks, so Kirk Cousins also played the Seahawks, apparently. But anyways, so Kirk Cousins is game for that. He goes back the next year. They finish 8-8. They miss the playoffs. But Washington is still undecided about what they want to do long-term with Kirk Cousins, and so they make the move to franchise tag Kirk Cousins again for roughly $26 to $27 million. So Kirk Cousins, over 2 years, under the franchise tag with Washington, made $50 million, but Cousins was adamant he was going to hit free agency because he knew in free agency he could get a record-setting contract, because no good quarterbacks ever hit free agency, ever. It never happens. And so Kirk Cousins goes out and he plays two more seasons under the franchise tag for Washington. He ends up, I believe they finished 7-9 or 8-8 again in Cousins' third season, or third full season as a starting quarterback. It was the fourth year of Jay Gruden. Jay Gruden would get a contract extension after the fact and then get fired. But Kirk Cousins would then enter free agency and get the most guaranteed money in the history of the NFL for a quarterback. He got $84 million guaranteed, $28 million a season, to go to the Minnesota Vikings for three seasons. So altogether, you add those three numbers up, Kirk Cousins got a five-year, $125 million contract. If you add in these last 2 years that Kirk Cousins just got on an extension, Kirk Cousins got paid 7 years and roughly $190 million for seven seasons to quarterback the Washington football team and the Minnesota Vikings. And so Kirk Cousins finds himself in a position where he got extra years on his contract by betting on himself, a long-term extension that he probably wouldn't have gotten under normal circumstances, because Kirk Cousins was able to hit free agency at 27 years old. When, for example, well, no, not 27. He would have had to have been 29, maybe. Let's see how old Kirk Cousins is now. Kirk Cousins' age is 32. So Kirk Cousins, if he turns 33 this year, he spent 5 years. So Kirk Cousins was able to hit free agency at age 29 instead of signing the long-term deal at 27, not hitting free agency again until 31 or 32, and potentially losing money on the back ends of his contracts than what he would have gotten had he played it out and signed the contract with Minnesota. So Kirk Cousins earned himself roughly $50 million more, which if you percentage that is roughly 25% more money by betting on himself during those franchise tags. And so Kirk Cousins proved two things. A, teams can't help themselves from spending in free agency. The Vikings should not be giving Kirk Cousins two-year contract extensions, but they did it anyways, and they've been roughly 500 with one playoff win under Kirk Cousins. B, a franchise tag is a viable way to get an extra year or two on your largest contract window. For most of these positions, other than wide receiver and running back, well, I guess wide receiver too, but other than running back, your best window to get paid is your second contract, age roughly year 5 in the league till year 8 in the league. That is your best window to get a long-term contract. And so for Kirk Cousins, he got two of those, basically. He got a two-year contract that made him one of the 5 highest-paid quarterbacks in the league. He got a 3-year contract that, for a time, made him one of the 3 highest-paid quarterbacks in the league, and he just got a 2-year extension that made him one of the 7 highest-paid quarterbacks in the league. So over a span of 7 seasons, Kirk Cousins got to be one of the 5 highest-paid quarterbacks in the NFL without, and highest-paid players in the NFL by that, without ever being a top-5 quarterback ever in his career. Not before, not since, not after. Kirk Cousins has kind of been in that like 9 to 15 range, but he's been a top-5 quarterback in terms of highest paid every single year of those 7 years of his contract. And so all of a sudden, players were content to play out the franchise tag because Kirk Cousins proved that somewhere, somehow, some team would be desperate enough to still pay out a record-setting contract in free agency, just like the Cowboys are playing with Dak Prescott right now. So from a management standpoint, we get into part B, which is the rise of long-term cap flexibility. Because the one-year contract all of a sudden became a viable option for maintaining this newly important goal of long-term salary cap flexibility. The most recent successful model of roster construction, and it's a copycat league. Understandably, this is not the only model, but it's a copycat league, so everyone starts to follow in transition. The most recent model of roster construction says that teams can always find a way around the NFL salary cap. Signing long-term extensions with opt-outs for teams late in their deals, but also for players entering that prime window of contention, is a hugely viable option. Dead cap space is a strategic play NFL teams use to get around the salary cap problems for the coming season. And so many of these teams competing for a championship now try to extend their windows by taking on $30 million, $50 million, and even $95 million short-term cap penalties, such as the New Orleans Saints, who right now are $95 million over the cap, but they're really like $60 because of Drew Brees' contract being restructured. Teams have continued to push the envelope, and with strategic releases, dead cap hits, and in some cases even trades, NFL franchises can spend big and still stay within the salary cap rules season to season. Now, is salary cap kind of a dumb concept? Yeah, for sure. It's meant to protect owners from themselves, from just spending ridiculous amounts of money and losing money year over year to field teams that may or may not be competitive, because signing free agents doesn't guarantee you a good football team. It usually guarantees you a mediocre football team. The best football teams are the combination of young players with strategically signed free agents. But as a result of the changes in the salary cap, the franchise tag has become a viable mode for constructing a roster year over year. And the best example I can give you of that this year is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who obviously are coming off of the Super Bowl. So the Buccaneers will likely franchise tag Chris Godwin this offseason. the Bucks have $21 million in cap space, but, and this is the big but, they have already budgeted in franchise tag money because last offseason, the Buccaneers franchise tagged edge rusher Shaq Barrett for $16 million, and Godwin's franchise tag under the wide receiver entering his first or exiting his first 4 years, going into his second contract. For a wide receiver going into his second contract, the number for the franchise tag is $15.8 million. Exactly what Shaq Barrett was getting last year, give or take about $200,000. The numbers are flexible anyways. Instead of worrying about Godwin, the Buccaneers' focus can now be intense on re-signing Shaq Barrett, which I assume they will. However, if Shaq Barrett had played poorly this year, the Bucs could have let him walk and transferred his franchise tag money from 2020 onto Godwin, whom they can also take another year to evaluate before giving him a long-term extension, because it's really hard to win when you have two wide receivers making top 10 money, which they would do with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. But for 1 year, then you're okay because you can circumvent the salary cap. And the example of what I was talking about for if Shaq Barrett had played poorly and they could have just moved on, the example of that is the Arizona Cardinals, because the Arizona Cardinals last year gave Kenyon Drake a $10 million transition tag. The Cardinals are probably not going to bring back Kenyon Drake. However, Hassan Reddick, their first-round edge rusher from 5 years ago, or I'm sorry, 4 years ago, they declined his fifth-year option, from 4 years ago has a franchise tag valuation worth $14.6 million. So the Cardinals, who have cap flexibility, can take that $10 million they budgeted for Drake last season and apply it to Hassan Reddick for $14 million. So instead of a $14 million hit against the cap, it's really, if you budget correctly, a $4 million, $4.5 million cap hit, or $4.5 million less to bring back Hassan Reddick. And to be honest, Hassan Reddick was already making $4 million. So that balances itself out. His pay grade is what you get by subtracting Kenyon Drake. Now, the Cardinals also have to address the running back position, but if you do it through the draft, then those financial the numbers of your draft pick are already set in stone and budgeted in with the new league calendar and built into the salary cap. The salary cap money that would go towards those draft picks can't be spent in free agency. So, but if you trade the pick, then the money then gets transferred over to free agency. All of this is to say that the franchise tag has become an effective form of roster construction for those NFL front offices. And this brings us into part C now, where more players are staying on the franchise tag year over year because teams simply aren't trading high draft picks for these types of players anymore. The first round pick has gone down in valuation, and therefore the players that are being traded have gone down in valuation because teams are hanging on to those first round picks and being tossed around a little bit more. In 2019, the season where every tagged player was either traded or re-signed, the three players who were traded were all worth first-round picks. The Chiefs got a first-round pick from San Francisco in acquiring Dee Ford. The Seahawks got a first-round pick from the Chiefs, the other first-round pick they already had, for Frank Clark. The Texans could have gotten a first-round or high second-round pick for Jadeveon Clowney, but Jack Easterby traded him for a third-rounder and Barcavius Singo and Ready to Mingo just in an effort to get rid of him. And so teams would rather tag and hang on to their own franchise players instead of trading for new ones. And more teams than ever before the franchise tagging of – or sorry, more teams than ever before the tagging of franchise players are deciding to budget in these franchise tags and just franchising people year over year. So last year, after there were 6 franchise tags in 2019, 15 players received franchise tags, and only one got a long-term contract extension, and another one, Yannick Ngakoue, got traded twice and still will probably get the franchise tag this offseason. And so in this year's season, like 15 or so players are slated to get the franchise tag. And here's the list of those players right now. And these are realistic potential. I know there was the news coming out earlier today that Chris Carson would not be receiving the franchise tag from the Seahawks, which makes sense for both parties. I wouldn't pay $8 million for Chris Carson, and I don't think Chris Carson thinks he can get a long-term contract for more or less per what the market probably dictates is less per year, but more years added onto the contract. So if you take Chris Carson out, there's about 15 candidates for the franchise tag. The most notable one, of course, Dak Prescott. His is worth about $37.7 million. And that could go up based on when he signs the franchise tag and if Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson get record-setting contract extensions. Aaron Jones is worth $8.5 million. I think the Packers and Jones are mutually agreeing to part ways, but Aaron Jones is probably worth Joe Mixon money in free agency. And so that puts him around like $11 million a season for 4 seasons. So if you can get 1 year at $8.5 million, he's below market value for the Packers. But I think the Packers would like to move on because the running back market is kind of skewy and kind of messed up too. Kenny Golladay, $15.8 million. I expect the Lions will franchise tag him. Will Fuller, $15.8 million for the Texans. Could go either way. That one might be a tag and trade scenario, to be honest. Allen Robinson, $17.8 million. The Bears are in such a tricky situation. And we'll come back around to Allen Robinson when I mention Carson Wentz coming up. Chris Godwin, we talked about before, $15.8 million. I expect he'll either get franchise tagged or they'll agree to a long-term re-sign. Jonnu Smith, $9.5 million for the Titans. I expect the Titans to do that and probably let Jadeveon Clowney walk and then focus on replacing him that way. Hunter Henry, this would be his second year on the franchise tag, so his is worth $12.7 million. I wouldn't personally do it, but I also understand why the Chargers would want to bring back Hunter Henry on a one-year franchise tag, and why for Hunter Henry, there's no way you're going to get $13 million on a single contract. This is the betting on yourself that Kirk Cousins set in motion. Hunter Henry has been betting on himself because he has gotten 2 years, $22 million total on the franchise tag. So he's gotten $11 million a year for 2 seasons, and he's going to get a nice free agent contract next year. Like, Hunter Henry is the definition of betting on yourself and having it work out. Taylor Moten, $13.6 mil for the Panthers. I expect the Panthers will do it just because they can afford it and they're not really concerned with like people walking away right now. Hassan Reddick, we mentioned him earlier for the Cardinals, 14.6. I expect Hassan Reddick will get the franchise tag. Yannick Ngakoue, 15.4. This one's interesting because I don't know if people are following Twitter right now, but it appears that Von Miller may be headed out of Tennessee, and it seems headed out of Denver, might be headed to Tennessee, but it does appear that Von Miller is headed toward the parting of ways with the Denver Broncos. And I saw Torrey Smith tweet out that it looks like Von Miller is headed to Baltimore, and I got to be honest, that makes the most sense on a 1 year or a 2 year contract, like they did with Calais Campbell. And Matthew Judon's on the way out of Baltimore. He'll probably maybe tag and trade for Judon, but this is the thing. They can't trade Judon and Ngakoue. So I expect Judon will hit free agency and get a big contract from someone. Buffalo Bills make that happen. But if you're going to keep Ngakoue and you want to pair that defensive line with Ngakoue, Derek Wolfe, Calais Campbell, and Von Miller, I'm doing it. Seems like a good idea. But I am skeptical at best, and For the Ravens, they have so many options. That's a good thing. And Von Miller makes the most sense going to Baltimore, and he makes sense going to the Saints. Both of those make a lot of sense in terms of trying to make a push for the Super Bowl, which I want to see Von Miller on Baltimore because I think I'm leaning towards Baltimore winning the AFC next year. Marcus May for the Jets. Jets have money. Jets can't really afford to let some of these guys go, so I would bet that they make a decision on Marcus May coming up sooner or later. And Justin Simmons is the last one, and he's another case like Hunter Henry. He is betting on himself and getting that extra contract as well. And he got franchise tagged last year. He's getting franchise tagged again this year. I think he's made roughly like $12 million. Maybe he gets a long-term extension with the Broncos. That's an entire possibility this year, but it's possible that they go another direction. And for Minnesota, Anthony Harris makes sense too. This would be his second year on the franchise tag, but I suspect that he'll leave in free agency this year. So the Vikings will go in a different direction. So that is the franchise tag numbers for this year. They are deep. They are complex. They are super fascinating, and we can play that game all the way out for a number of time. But that's the story behind the franchise tag. I mentioned the Le'Veon Bell thing in there. The Le'Veon Bell story is fun. One of these days, we just got to go back and do a deep dive on that Le'Veon Bell time, because that was certainly an interesting time, no question about it. All right, let's talk Carson Wentz real quick. And again, Carson Wentz talk is definitely getting worn down, and it's what you do in February is you talk extensively about Carson Wentz. You talk extensively about Carson Wentz. But this story has gotten interesting because it appears Carson Wentz does not want to go to the Bears. I wonder why, because it looks like Nick Foles is probably not going to be traded for Carson Wentz. But I do find it fascinating that as everything starts to everything is starting to get more and more interesting around Carson Wentz, mostly because everything's at a stalemate. We expect Carson Wentz will be the next big move because it's going to happen before free agency. But it does look like the Eagles are willing to be patient, to wait for the Bears to overpay on Carson Wentz. They are waiting it out. But now there's the rumor that Carson Wentz doesn't want to go play for the Bears. And so this makes everything more convoluted and more interesting because everything riding on this Carson Wentz trade, and by everything, I mean the job status of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, and the future of the Philadelphia Eagles, who might draft a quarterback. But for them, they are in this just weird position. And this is why I wanted to wait to talk about Allen Robinson, because it seems clear Carson Wentz is going to be either a Colt or a Bear. And if he goes to the Bears, well, I think there's nothing you can do to save Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy's job. I think both of them are just dead men walking at this point. Both are going to be fired at some point within the next year. The Bears are going to start a retool and a teardown, and they've had their championship window. It is obviously closed, and there's nothing they can really do to reopen it apart from acquiring a generational superstar, which I'm fairly certain Carson Wentz is not. Fairly certain, going to keep the window open, but fairly certain Carson Wentz is not a generational superstar. But anyways, since I don't think there's any way for them to keep their jobs, the Carson Wentz trade is fun just for the anarchy of all of it. Like, the idea of Carson Wentz being the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears is funny to me. And Nick Foles being the backup is also funny to me, because we are going to see so many Carson Wentz, Nick Foles jokes. But Carson Wentz doesn't want to go back up Nick Foles. Carson Wentz doesn't want to go be in the same quarterback room as Nick Foles. Carson Wentz just wants to be away from Nick Foles, and that's why he seems to be putting pressure on the Bears to not trade for him. And right now, Roseman is just calling a stalemate. There's no reason to trade Carson Wentz now. There's no reason to trade Carson Wentz later on. The only situation where you blow it is if you get too close to the sun. Don't fly too close to the sun, because all of a sudden, if the Colts go sign Ryan Fitzpatrick, like I think they might end up doing, all of a sudden, you have screwed yourself, because now there is only the Bears and the Broncos in the running, but the Broncos don't want to give up a lot for Carson Wentz. So you have screwed yourself if the Colts take their offer off the table. Now, as they wait out the stalemate and they wait for the Bears to blink, you wait, you hear the rumors around Carson Wentz. And when you hear the rumors around Carson Wentz that he doesn't want to go to the Bears, one, you don't have to worry about that, but if the Bears are going to back out of a Carson Wentz trade, it's going to get infinitely more interesting. It's going to be infinitely more complex. It's going to be stranger and stranger and stranger, because if the Bears back out, well, the good news, the Colts have the highest offer, and the Colts reportedly have offered 2 second-round picks for Carson Wentz. And to be honest, that's probably where I would value Carson Wentz at. If I had a low first-round pick, then maybe, like, if I'm the Saints, who have like the 26th pick in the draft, the 28th pick in the draft, whatever it is, that one I'm considering. I'm considering trading the 28th pick to move up and get a Carson Wentz. But if I have the 21 pick for the Colts and the Colts have big needs at left tackle, like, okay, I'm trading the second round picks and then drafting a left tackle, because the left tackle is more important to me than Carson Wentz. And unless I can acquire a left tackle in free agency, the market is very bare right now, I'm just kind of waiting it out. And the Eagles need the Colts to keep their offer on the table. And the Colts know that the Eagles need them to keep their offer on the table. And they've tried to get the Broncos involved. The Broncos are looking at their options. They're not going to pay a heavy price for Carson Wentz because they already have a quarterback in their back pocket in Drew Locke. The Colts and the Bears do not have a quarterback in their back pocket, and that is why the Eagles are trying to start a bidding war between the two. And to be honest, the Colts are smart enough to not engage in a bidding war, and I'm not sure if the Bears are smart enough to not engage in a bidding war. Now, the Bears, the issue is the Colts have the highest offer right now. So you could go above the Colts, but it's pretty hard to go above the 2 second-rounders plus extra compensation right now without giving up a first-round pick. And if you're the Bears, do you give up a first-round pick? Because if Wentz says he doesn't want to go to the Bears, well, the Eagles' alternative leverage is just to say, well, we're just going to keep Carson Wentz. But the Eagles don't want to keep Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz doesn't want to stay on the Eagles. This is a breakup that they are trying desperately to engage in and complete. And the issue behind the Carson Wentz situation is that the Eagles don't know what they're going to do. The Eagles don't know what their quarterback room is going to look like next year, because they may be forced into a situation where they either have to keep Carson Wentz or sell him for even less than what the market dictates right now, if you are that intent on moving on from Carson Wentz, which it seems pretty evident, not going to say certain, but evident that they want to do and that Carson Wentz wants to do. They want to just start over with a new coach, a new quarterback, and just hit the reset button. And so now you're left in this interesting position where you have to weigh the Colts' offer versus the potential of the Bears blinking, and potentially the Bears starting a bidding war with the Colts if they're going to call the Colts bluff that interested in Carson Wentz. We're not going to pay more than 2 seconds for Carson Wentz because we're notoriously frugal, but the good kind of frugal that Chris Ballard is. And we're going to go sign another 1 year Ryan Fitzpatrick and see how that works out, which I think would be a viable option for the Colts. Considering that the Colts can't get the best of the best option, they are just unfortunately just sitting ducks waiting for this one to play out. Maybe they'll get in the Matt Ryan game, but that seems highly unlikely because of when Matt Ryan is going to become available. But it makes a lot of sense what they're doing right now. All the parties make sense. It's just the Bears control all the chips here. And if Carson Wentz says he doesn't want to go to the Bears, and the Bears decide that because of that, we are going to back out from an offer, or we're going to make an offer, and if Carson says he doesn't want to come to us, then we're just going to kind of be sitting ducks, and we're going to back out, and we're just going to try and go get a Sam Darnold or a Marcus Mariota, which I doubt the Bears are going to do, but the Bears are just the Bears. they're going to get fired anyways. Nagy's going to get fired. Pace is going to get fired no matter who they bring in. Maybe Deshaun Watson, but probably they would still get fired even with Deshaun Watson. Like, other than that, Nagy and Pace are going to get fired no matter who they bring in. But for the Eagles, they can still take all of their draft capital anyways. Isn't it beautiful how free agency works? Isn't it beautiful how negotiations work? Isn't it beautiful how calling your bluff works? The dopamine rush, if you're in the moment. Let's go to basketball real quick to wrap this up, because I was following the Utah Jazz recently, and I've started getting into some heated discussions and some heated debates with Utah Jazz fans on the internet. And there is a lot of hard feelings around Donovan Mitchell, and I love Donovan Mitchell. I hadn't even considered until recently that Donovan Mitchell might be a top 10 player in the NBA at this point. And this season has done a lot of good for that reputation, but it's been pretty remarkable how good Donovan Mitchell has been this year for the Utah Jazz. Donovan Mitchell's stat lines this year include 24 points per game, which is his highest total of his career. Donovan Mitchell, besides the 22.4 points per game, has 5 assists, 4 rebounds, is shooting 39% from 3, 42% from the field. He doesn't shoot a ton of layups. It's one of his lowest field goal percentages of his career. But Donovan Mitchell is scoring slightly more points than he ever has in his career. And this is his now third consecutive season averaging around 24 points per game. His effective field goal percentage has gone up slightly year over year. This is one of the beautiful things about Donovan Mitchell, is that from every single year of his career, from his rookie year where they won a playoff series, to 2018 where he's the focal point of the offense, to 2019 where he's now an all-star, to this year where he's leading the number one team in the Western Conference, with extremely great depth, I might add. Jordan Clarkson dropped 40 points on the 76ers the other night coming off the bench. So extremely good depth. That's the strong suit that the Jazz have. They have the best bench and the best depth in the entire NBA, better than the Lakers, better than the Clippers, better than the Bucks, better than the Nets, better than the Sixers. Those are the teams they're fighting against. Better than anyone in the sport. The Jazz have the best depth in the NBA. The beautiful part about this for Donovan Mitchell is that he's gotten better every year of his career. Every year he's gotten a little bit better. Every year he's had a little bit of a higher efficiency rating. Every single year he's had a few more win shares. Not even like a few more games, just like adds a couple like percentage points of a win share up every year of his career. Donovan Mitchell has improved slightly every single year of his career without any monumental jumps, apart from being the 13th overall pick in 2017 to being, you know, the focal point of an offense that beat the Los Angeles Clippers in a playoff series. Like, that kind of remarkable jump where, as a rookie, won a playoff series against the Clippers for the Utah Jazz. Obviously, Rudy Gobert was the best player on the team, but he was the focal point of the offense because Rudy Gobert is a best defensive big in the NBA for the last 5 years, but can't do more than dunks and post moves on offense. So Utah is really good, and it reminded me of that magical 2018 Rookie of the Year race between Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell. So for about 10 minutes, I just wanted to revisit that Rookie of the Year race from 2018, because Ben Simmons is amazingly gifted. And I've talked about this a lot before. There are two types of stars in the NBA and really sports across the landscape, but it's never quite as transparent as in the NBA. There are two kinds of stars. Because of the body types in the NBA, there are people with extremely gifted body types and people who have mastered the craft faster than everyone else. Ben Simmons is a type A star. Donovan Mitchell is a type B star. Rudy Gobert is a type A star. Donovan Mitchell is a type B star. A lot of teams have two type B stars. The 76ers are built around two type A's. Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are both just ridiculously physically gifted. Ben Simmons being the power forward, 6'10", playing the point guard, driving to the lane as well as anyone not named Giannis and LeBron in the NBA. Joel Embiid, of course, being the just modern evolution of the big man, 7 feet tall, shoots threes, everyone inside. But there's type A and type B stars. And for example, Donovan Mitchell is someone who has, whatever, practiced his 10,000 hours to master a skill faster than everyone else, and so now has experimentation. But his body type is not that unique. Steph Curry's body type is not that unique. Damian Lillard, not that unique. Jimmy Butler, another great version of that. Just not really a unique body type on Jimmy Butler. And just the 10,000 hours goes from being seventh dude on the bench to best star in the league, the top 10 player, to leading a team to the NBA Finals. Like that kind of evolution at the position. Klay Thompson, type B star, not physically gifted, it's a jump shooting team, and it plays into his strengths. You can go down the list. LeBron type A, Anthony Davis type A. Those two might be the most type A players in the NBA. James Harden type B. Giannis type A, and Giannis is the rare combination of both. Giannis is the rare combination of ridiculously unique body type and more practice than anyone else in the sport, like just physically applying your body in such a way. Giannis and LeBron might be the two rare combinations of both. But anyways, so they're these type A stars. And so Ben Simmons was a type A star. Donovan Mitchell was a type B. You look at Ben Simmons, and you know Ben Simmons is unbelievably good. And we knew that right out of his rookie year that wasn't technically his rookie year because he missed all of 2017, which would have been his rookie year with injuries, the medical redshirt year that the Sixers used to do under the process where Fultz missed an entire season, Simmons missed an entire season, and Embiid missed two entire seasons before finally playing. So it was like the medical redshirt year for the Sixers. And so Donovan Mitchell was obviously and clearly amazing. Like you said, focal point of an offense that was the fifth seed in the Western Conference. Ben Simmons was the 1A, 1B with Joel Embiid on an offense for the Sixers, and really a team with the Sixers. That was the third seed in the Eastern Conference. Everyone is following the Sixers because they're like, oh my God, the process works. The process paid dividends. The process is over. The Sixers are really good. And we all knew Ben Simmons was going to win Rookie of the Year. I wanted Donovan Mitchell to win the Rookie of the Year because Donovan Mitchell was extremely likable. And a lot of people felt the same way. Like, he deserves recognition because under normal circumstances, he would win Rookie of the Year in a year where Michael Carter Williams won Rookie of the Year, or a year that Malcolm Brogdon won Rookie of the Year, or a year like last year where Kendrick Nunn finished second in the Rookie of the Year. Like, dude would have had a chance to win the whole award. He just happened to be playing in a year with Ben Simmons, where Ben Simmons is absolutely crazy. And Donovan Mitchell's joke to separate himself was the rookie card, was that Ben Simmons wasn't a true rookie. And so Donovan Mitchell wore the famous jacket, which I'm staring at right now because I own the rookie jacket. I'm staring at the rookie jacket right now, seeing Donovan Mitchell's magical rookie jacket, which states, rookie, definition, noun, an athlete playing in his or her first season as a member of a professional sports team. And it went viral. It went absolutely viral. When the rookie jacket was donned, everybody lost it because it was savage. That not that it was a shot at Ben Simmons, but just the fact that he was acknowledging this. He was acknowledging the Rookie of the Year race, that he wanted the Rookie of the Year award that badly, because it's usually something that just pundits talk about. It's something that gas bags like myself on radio shows and podcasts talk about Rookie of the Year. Like, the gas baggery is something that other people do. And so when Ben Simmons has to respond to that, and Donovan Mitchell takes that shot at Ben Simmons, oh my God, you best believe that was going viral. And so all of a sudden, everything and everyone is just losing their you-know-what. It's madness. It's funny. And everyone loves it. And Ben Simmons had a great response, which was, if his only argument is that I'm not a rookie, well, then the award's already over. Like, I've already won. If the only argument he can make is, well, I'm not a rookie, then that means he's won it. And that Rookie of the Year race was so much fun. It's one that it's going to join Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell at the hip, because for a magical 6 weeks, those magical 6 weeks from like right now in February until like the end of March and early April, when the regular season came to an end, the Rookie of the Year race was dominating sports talk radio. It was dominating ESPN. It was dominating people just wanting to fill content. If you had content to fill, if you were making 500 hours of content, or if you're ESPN, you're making 70,000 hours of content per year. That's an actual thing. They make 70,000 hours of content per year. If you're making that much content and you're looking for something to talk about, Rookie of the Year race is the place to go. And it worked out. It turned out to be great. Great, great content, great television, great conversation. And because Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell were willing to play along, and more specifically, Donovan Mitchell was willing to stoke the flames a little bit and go one-on-one with Ben Simmons in the rookie sophomore game, like, it was an amazing run. And you look back now, both of them are top 15 players in the sport. Both are perennial all-stars. Both have their awards. Ben Simmons won first team all NBA defense last year. Donovan Mitchell is going to make a playoff run. He's going to win some kind of award for a most improved, maybe, even though he hasn't won that much most improved, but he's now the best player on the best team in the Western Conference when he was the second best player on a team that won a playoff series back in 2018. They've got it all. They've both gotten better. They're both the stars we thought they would be because they were both awesome, and we saw it during their rookie years that Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell had an amazingly fun Rookie of the Year race. It was unbelievably all of that play out. And I really enjoyed that. I really enjoy reminiscing that stuff. It's super fun to get to reminisce in these magical stories. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. I saved all the plugging for the end this time. Instead of doing it off the front of the pod, let's plug at the end. Again, we mentioned the Instagram pages, Comical Sports Memes, Take It Easy Podcast, and, of course, Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Check out all of those. Follow the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. Also, be on the lookout for everyday episodes, fun conversations. There are going to be more stuff coming out there. Follow our blog, Slippery Slope Sports. If you want the full story on the franchise tag, that dropped today, so you can check that out as well. And, of course, continue to check out all the fun content on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. There's always all kinds of great content. We got more wrestling coming up. I believe the next show's in a couple hours, so be on the lookout for that. Maybe 3 hours, more like. So be on the lookout for that one as well. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in today. We'll be back again tomorrow with the Game Chat guys. So thank you again, and as always, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.